Welcome to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, episode 40. Today on the show, I have Ron McKeefree, author of CEO Strength Coach and Vice President of Performance and Education at Play. Today's episode is brought to you by Simply Faster. Simply Faster is an online athletic performance technology shop distributing items such as the FreeLab Timing System, GymAware, K-Box, 1080 Sprint, and the SpeedMat. I've gotten many of these items from Simply Faster and can confidently say that they make today's best training technology available to everybody. The FreeLab Timing System has revolutionized both my practices and my athlete assessments, allowing me to look at the 10-meter fly capability of dozens of athletes in a matter of seconds. It is wireless, compact, portable, and incredibly versatile. The K-Box and 1080 Sprint are fantastic tools for any coach looking to build speed, agility, and implement training scenarios that go beyond the traditional weight room. The 1080 Sprint is being used by great coaches training some of the fastest sprinters in the world, and it truly represents high-performance speed training. I can personally attest that Simply Faster's customer service is second to none. Christopher at Simply Faster responds quickly to queries, and anyone who makes a purchase from Simply Faster is in good hands. If you want to acquire some of the best high-tech training equipment available, stop by simplyfaster.com. That's simply with an I, faster.com. They are the future of coaching technology. All right, welcome to the show today. Thanks for joining us. My name is Joel Smith. I'm your host, and we have on the show Ron McKeefree. As I mentioned in the brief introduction, he is the author of the book CEO Strength Coach, and it wasn't too long ago on Just Fly Sports that I did a email or text interview with him on the questions regarding all facets of strength and conditioning as a career. What does it take from a personal perspective to make it in the field? What do you not learn in school that will help you be successful as a coach? Because as we'll get to, not a lot of people are retiring from the strength and conditioning profession. And if you've read Ron's book, CEO Strength Coach, you're going to see that there's a lot more to being a successful strength and conditioning or physical preparation, whatever term you want to use, being a professional there and being successful at it than just taking an exercise science class, getting a certification, you know, having those letters behind your name. It's a lot more than sets and reps. As you'll learn from Ron. And man, Ron's background in the field of physical prep, strength and conditioning is extensive. He covers all facets of the industry. He has tons of experience. He's one of the wisest guys I know. He's been in the NFL, Major League Baseball. He's trained special forces. He's done long stints in the NCAA. And again, I'm learning more and more that these longtime strength and conditioning coaches, especially those who have been in the scholastic setting for a long time, these guys have just some amazing wisdom. They're like sages in a way. And every time they talk on just being a better coach, managing people, relationships with athletes, team culture, buy-in, all those X factors that you didn't learn in school, but you get out in the field and you realize just how dang important they are. These coaches are just a treasure to talk to. And so on the show today, we're chatting on the topics specifically of the career track of sports performance. We're talking on ideas on team culture and buy-in, perspectives and reflections on Ron's own career, and much more. So if you're a strength conditioning professional, physical prep, or just a coach looking at more insight on the art of coaching, track and field coaching as well, or team sports, just a really, really insightful episode. So with that said, let's get on to the show today. Episode 40 with Ron McKeefree. All right, Ron, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks a lot, buddy. Appreciate it, man.
Awesome. So I'm really excited for this talk here we're going to have. And could you kick it all off by sharing a little bit about your background in the coaching industry and then where you are now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I'm obviously out there quite a bit, so I think most people know my story. But, you know, I've worked between college and pro for the last 20 years. Started off Kansas City Royals, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, NFL Europe. Spent 10 years with University of South Florida when we basically took that program from scratch to up to a number two ranking at one point. went from there to Army Special Forces, University of Tennessee, and then, you know, just kind of the ugly part of the profession, you know, going and getting let go as a staff at Tennessee. Went from there to Cincinnati Bengals, Eastern Michigan. And, you know, during that time, I was away from my family for 3.5 years. And, you know, it started off as being away for 6 months, and then it ended up being a year, and then it ended up being 3.5 years. And ultimately made the decision to leave Eastern Michigan, a job I loved, to go work as a vice president for performance and education with Play, which is a company that has supported me in my podcast for several years, but and a company that, you know, I've gotten to know over the years, truly respect their mission and the way they're going about their business, and then be able to come in and help create this performance brand within the company through education, coaching coaches, and then the performance side, and kind of the entrepreneurship side of building that out really excited me. And being able to obviously be back at home and then, you know, making a global impact and being able to travel the world and consult with teams and put on educational events and do different things it was too good of an opportunity to turn down. And you know, I couldn't look myself in the mirror and say that I was being the best husband and father I could possibly be if I wasn't going to be in the house the last 4 years that my kids were in the house. You know, they're all in high school now. So, you know, super excited about my role, super excited about where I'm at now. But, you know, that was a short kind of synopsis of a long career in the field.
Yeah. Awesome, man. It sounds like you're doing some amazing things in your position now. And, we'll get to that a little bit, in some of the coaching questions, and the coaching education, but, along those lines too, I had this question then, but I'd like to kind of bump it up a little bit, is, what's your advice or what to expect, and then maybe some advice for coaches, either coaches getting into the field, coaches now, in terms of life, work-life balance? Like, what do you expect, and what are some maybe principles to go by when it comes to this whole coaching thing and life balance?
Yeah, I mean, we could talk for an hour just on that one question, I think. But I think for me, I think the biggest thing is most of the time you get in the profession and you have these thoughts of grandeur, and you want the elite, you want the pros, you want Olympics, you want all those things, and rightfully so. I mean, those are the elite athletes. Those are the fun ones to work with, and that drives you. You know, and as a young coach, you end up having to make a decision at some point as to what you're willing to sacrifice to be able to attain your goals. You know, and early on, that goal is to be at the elite. Later on, as you have a family, a child, you know, kids, you know, money becomes a factor, all those types of things. You have to be willing to sacrifice time away from family, or maybe a little bit less money, or maybe sometimes it's just pride and being an intern longer than you want to be, or whatever it may be, to eventually obtain your goal. I think any goal in our field is obtainable. It's just what are you willing to sacrifice, and how long are you willing to sacrifice to be able to obtain that? And so I think that's the question. And that's what I would tell my interns is, you know, do you have both feet in, or are you got just a toe in, or do you have, you know, just a foot in? And ultimately, if you just have a toe or a foot, you're not going to make it. You know, you usually have to be all in. And then from there, I think the challenge is, and what I wrote my book about and all that, was diversifying yourself to the point to where you're able to sustain a career in this field for the long haul.
You're listening to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster. Yeah, that's a great answer. Along those lines too, and you had mentioned it a little bit, you know, with your podcast and PLAE, and I believe you talk about this in your book. And if you want to mention your book here and kind of some things within, that would be awesome. Tell us a little bit about that. But just like the idea of being more than just a coach, like you kind of be an entrepreneur, and you kind of have almost a side hustle, if you will, in this profession. Could you talk about how that kind of works into it, and then some of those ideas in your book?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I mean, you know, the book, I wrote it, what, a year ago now, or a little over a year ago. And you know, the premise of the book is to be a success. And, you know, ultimately you define success by the impact you make on young people. That's ultimately what it is. But you know, within your career, you have to be essentially three things. You know, you have to be a great technician. You have to know your craft, whatever that may be. You know, so if you're a strength coach, obviously you need to know sets and reps and training philosophies and, you know, programming and all those things. And unfortunately, that's where most coaches spend their entire career. they're only concerned with weightlifting. They're only concerned with sets, reps. And they, a head coach comes downstairs and says, you can't power, you can't deadlift anymore. And you can literally see the steam coming out of their ears about, short circuiting on the fact that they can't power, deadlift anymore. And, I think ultimately where the rubber meets the road is you have to also be a great manager of time, people, and resources, and you have to be an entrepreneur. You have to be forward thinking and constantly sharpening the sword. If you stay at the same level, you're gonna get fizzled out as well, And then on top of that, I think if you're gonna be in this profession for any period of time, you're gonna go through periods of transition. I mean, you were a track coach and you were a strength coach, and myself, I've been, I've gone, baseball, football, elite special forces, and you're gonna have these periods of transition, and in between that, just the fact of the profession is that it's not if, it's when you're going to get fired, in this field. You have to be able to support your family and do all those things. And if you don't have skill sets to be able to sustain that or multiple streams of income, that also is where entrepreneurship comes in, to be able to sustain those things in other ways. And so as coaches, we have to make sure that we're working on all three of those areas simultaneously. And what happens is most coaches don't worry about those other two until they get there, and oftentimes that's too late.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. I think especially with kind of maybe this, the way that career in society can be sometimes, just because you have a salary, things feel comfortable, and then you don't think about anything else. And I think, yeah, especially in this industry, that's really, really great advice, important things to think about. Ron, you had mentioned a little bit about your, and we were talking about this a little bit more prior to, but can you talk a little bit about how your, and you had talked about transitions in your career, how your role now as a coach education, how that's impacted you as a strength coach? How has that made you a better coach as you've had that last transition in your own life?
Yeah, sure. I mean, with what I'm doing now, it really falls into three buckets. I mean, I'm an ambassador for the company. I speak and I write for them. I lead the education initiative, which is, right now is summits and conferences. It's the podcast. It's, we have a web show called Beyond the Chalk. It's a lot of things like that. And then there's the performance piece, which is the thing that we're growing, which is going to be facilities and a training system and hiring and placing coaches, around the world, working with teams and consulting with teams. And so, with all those three areas, that's really, it's allowed me to get out and see a bunch of different things, and I think sometimes as coaches, we get so fixated on the next training block or just this one team that, we become really efficient in that and we become really good at that. But then all of a sudden you throw some other things in the equation and, we short circuit as well, where, we get frantic. We all of a sudden we have to answer 30 emails and it's the worst day ever, What I've learned for myself is that, any day I'm juggling 50 balls in the air, right? Each day, and I have to keep them all up and I have to keep them all going. And I have to be able to flip, a switch whenever I'm focused on any one of those. And that's made me a better strength coach. And then obviously being able to network and learn from and work with some of the best teams in the world, it's really challenged me to grow as a coach. And I think that's ultimately, as coaches, that's what we preach each and every day, is when you're uncomfortable is when growth occurs. And so, I've been in some uncomfortable situations for me, being in a high level board meeting in a high rise in New York City. That's something that's not normal for me as a strength coach. I'm used to wearing t-shirt and shorts every day, but it's allowed me to grow. And, there's no doubt that if I walked back into, a president or an athletic director's meeting and was in a similar situation, that I would look at that differently.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to those, it's like the growing levels of awareness from all those hats you wear. I like how you said uncomfortableness is so necessary. It's like, or C.T. Fletcher, the motivational video, where he was playing the way where it's like pain is necessary. And I think about that a lot.
I had CT speak to the Bengals one year.
Did you really?
He's a trip, man.
That's awesome. He's a trip. I would have loved that.
Tell you some good stories.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm only there's 6, 7 hours away from SoCal. Or maybe I'll have to take a trip down sometime. That'd be a trip. Real cool.
He's a
Or yeah,
trip.
or get him up here. That'd be like you did. That'd be awesome. Cool. When you're Ron, when you're looking for, or back when you were NCAA strength coach, you're hiring strength coaches, that process. What are some of the biggest things you look for? Like, I guess maybe even outside, obviously you had mentioned it's important that you have had a contact with that athlete, or not hiring out of the blue, but outside of that, like, what are some big things that you're looking for in someone who can make it, someone who can make it in the profession?
That's a good question. And I've talked about this quite a bit, so I'll try not to be repetitive in how I do it. But essentially what people, here's what I think people think, is they think that they go to college, they get the degree, they get the certification. Now I'm qualified to be a strength coach. And there's a big difference between being qualified or being credentialed and being qualified, and those are credentials, the certification and the degree and all that. That just gets you in the door, From there, the next thing you look at is the intangibles, And so a lot of people think that, I call it their unique selling proposition, their USP. What most people would say, if I asked you, I mean, or your listeners, what was their unique selling proposition, you would probably get answers like, I work hard, or I relate well to athletes, or whatever. And typically, you get those kind of responses, and those are prereqs. Those aren't intangibles. Those aren't differentiators. Those are things that you have to do to be able to do this job. I mean, if you don't work hard, you're not gonna last. If you don't relate well to people, you're not gonna get the job. Or you're not gonna be there very long. And so, now you got to come back and say, okay, what's gonna separate you? What are you gonna bring to the table that's unique than anybody else? I give a personality test. It's Gary Smalley did you've heard of like the Myers-Briggs and things like that. There's a 4-part personality test that gets you either you're a lion, you're an otter, you're a beaver, you're a retriever. And so like I'm a lion. Lion is somebody that likes to stand up in front, likes to boast, pound his chest, and he's got great vision and all that. But there's also the weakness of it that I'm not very good when it comes to, I'll have 30 ideas before breakfast. But I might not get any of those ideas done because I'm not the detailed person. I need a detailed person, which is the otter. You think about an otter kind of building a dam, that's your detail. That's the person that's going to have 20 different to-do lists, and they're going to make sure, their whole world's wrecked if they don't get them done. But they're not the person you want in front of the team, kind of, setting the vision and commanding the room, I'm sorry, the beaver, that's the beaver. The otter is the playful one. The otter is, the one that's going to be dancing to the music with the players. It's going to always have a smile on their face. Could be the worst day ever, but they're going to be joyful and playful. But that's not the person you want doing your discipline. And then you got the retriever, which is your most loyal person. Nothing changes when you leave the room, but they're not quite ready to be the leader. And so when I'm hiring somebody, it's a long answer, a long-winded answer, but when I'm hiring somebody, you got to be credentialed. You have to have the intangibles. But now I'm looking for experience working with the sports that I'm looking for. And then if I lost an otter, I'm replacing an otter. If I lost a lion, I'm going to replace a lion. And then I'm also looking for stuff that you're going to have that is going to be unique, that's going to teach me something. So maybe you have advanced training in kettlebells. Maybe you're a tech guy. Maybe you got an ATC background or something like that, where I'm going to bring in somebody that's going to help make me better in my weaknesses.
Yeah, that's an awesome way of putting it. I actually, when you were mentioning the Myers-Briggs and then I said the animals, I was like, wait, which one am I? Like, I was thinking, I'm probably like the more the beaver type. That makes perfect sense. I mean, it is funny too. You think of a lot of people who hire just based on knowing somebody, but then can they complement what you're doing? And that's just such a cool quantified way of putting it. I'd never thought about that before.
Well, what's unique about that, and this is, I mean, once I learned that, it was instant. Most people that are like yourself, where you're like, okay, I'm that now. Now you look around you and see if you have those other areas. And that's the thing, is when I first got into this business, when I hired coaches, I hired lions because I was a lion and I thought that I was a great strength coach. So I was going to put me in with, I was going to surround me with other lions. But when I did that, and there's some great coaches. I mean, Frank Wintrick at Virginia, Kaz Kazadi at Baylor. I mean, they're head strength coaches. They're at a high level as well. But we were all lions, and so we didn't always get along. We didn't always agree, and it was. I mean, there were some times that were tumultuous, and you know, it wasn't the best work environment, you know, except for when I, you know, like when I hired, what I was weak in, you know, in those other areas. And so that's what, you know, to me, you got to have coaches that are going to be your, you know, your weaknesses are their strengths and vice versa. As the leader, you have to be a good balance of all those things. But you get to be who you are when you become the leader. And when you're a young strength coach, you have to be a good balance of those things, because you may have to be a lion at one place. You may have to be a beaver at one place, you know. And so you have to play that role and you have to do it well. But when you become the leader, you can be who you are. And there's so much more that goes into it than just, you know, I got my CSCS and I have my degree. And I think that's what most young coaches miss.
You're listening to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster.
Yeah, it's definitely an apprenticeship-based profession. I mean, I could probably count, no discredit to my universities, but I feel like sometimes I could count on both hands the things that I learned that I actually use, and just so much of it is driven from apprenticeships and learning and hands-on, and yeah, you're totally right. Just having your CSCS is just, okay, now you're at least qualified, but that doesn't mean you're going to get the job. I think a lot of people miss that.
Absolutely.
Ron, I'm going to ask you a question. I talked a little bit with Mark Watts on this topic, on like not a lot of people retire from this profession. And you had mentioned a little bit too, it's not if you're going to get fired, it's kind of when, and then what are you going to do? And so how do you feel, and maybe I'll take this question a different way than I originally intended, but what's the best thing you think the profession kind of needs to give a little bit more stability for coaches? If you could change one thing, either that the way coaches approach the profession or maybe the rules of the game, what would that thing be to kind of give a little bit more stability in this profession?
Well, I think the number one thing is most, I think it's, we have to look at this and we have to constantly redefine what it means to be a strength and conditioning coach. You know, I think the traditional sense was I just stayed in the weight room and I coached weights and that was it, you know, but we all know that that's just a small part of our job now. I mean, you start talking character education, accountability and leadership and influence on the organization and all those things. I mean, it's redefined already, not to mention it's only a 60 plus year old profession, you know? And so you talk about, like you mentioned, apprenticeship type of roles, you know, law and medicine and those types of things in the past. I mean, we're talking hundreds of years, thousands of years, you know, for some of those. We're 60 years in, you know? And so the thing that frustrates me as a strength coach is that this profession was born out of a time when people thought it was bad to lift weights. I mean, people thought it was counterproductive to lift weights. And there were some key people that were early influencers and early pioneers that changed that to where the fact now we have some people making over $500,000 a year doing this. You know, so where is that ingenuity and where is that passion and where is that innovation now by our young coaches and our current coaches to create and continue to build roles for strength and conditioning coaches across the board? I mean, I think the last thing that probably is the most creative is tactical strength and conditioning and working with police and SWAT and military and things like that. And it created a lot more roles. You know, what's the next thing? How do we continue to grow this profession to where we continue to redefine coaching in a way that, you know, where it's not this anti, like, you know, some things that were performance based and it's like, that's just a performance coach. And there was a lesser kind of value there. Now it's like, this is just the field of strength and conditioning. And there's a certain standard that has to be upheld, you know? And to me, I think that's the number one thing is we got to continue to innovate. We got to continue to find jobs, create jobs. I think two really easy ways to do that would be you look at the European countries, you know, the Olympic sport countries and that high performance model and having a high performance manager that oftentimes is a strength coach in those countries. You know, have an assistant athletic director or associate athletic director that's in charge of sports performance. That's a good place for our aging strength coaches to go. You know, having a strength coach in every high school is somewhere where we need to continue to grow and make that a mandate. I mean, that should be, in my opinion, that should be the NSCA's number one mission, is to put a strength coach in every high school, because there's no less liability. And that's, it's big time, you know, it's big time sports in a lot of places. And if anything, you know, our better coaches, you look at, again, you look at European countries and things like that, their better coaches are at their youth levels, you know, from a development and, and an identification standpoint, you know. And so we have to continue to push ourselves there. And I think that's what I'm doing in my role. You know, I'm redefining in some ways what it means to be a strength coach and a role that a strength coach can have, you know, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something I knew we had talked about before. I think that's really cool what you're doing, Ron, with the coaching education and we need those people. It's almost, and you said that the profession isn't that old. And so, yeah, like this older growing group, it's almost like you're passing the wisdom down, finding new ways in the coaching spectrum to educate the younger up and coming coaches and make this profession better.
Yeah. I think educate, I mean, and I know you didn't mean to skirt over this, but like the education is just half my role, but the performance side is the other. And although we haven't released a lot of that yet, I think we're going to be doing some really cool, unique things that are going to, again, be good bridges and good pathways for strength coaches to continue to build on and have a home and have a place for those periods of transition, or they're not willing to sacrifice for those high level, you know, sport jobs. The time that it takes to be away, you know, and so I'm excited about that. I'm excited, you know, I still very much consider myself a coach that's in the trenches. You know, it's in my DNA, it's who I am, and trying to find creative ways within my new role to continue to do that on a daily basis. I'd be lying if I said I was doing it on a daily basis right now, but there's every intention for that to happen.
Yeah, I imagine you have a lot more time too in that scope to kind of reflect on other things that you were doing before in the NCAA and like see it from all these different angles in that performance element.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's, I mean, again, you see yourself, I mean, just you can't go out of the country and see it a different way in a different country where there isn't the bias of the U.S. or whatever to see just a different way, not a right way, not a wrong way, just a different way of doing things. And a lot of times you have the opportunity to interact with young coaches that just simply say, you know, how do you get stronger? What's it mean to get stronger? You know, how does a muscle grow? You get to some of these basic why questions and it's like, man, what do you mean you don't know how to jump rope? How do you teach somebody to jump rope? You just pick up a rope and you go, right? You know, no, there's some skills acquisition that needs to happen there that a good coach can do very quickly. You know, that's something that, you know, I had to go back and there's some basic things that it's like, man, you know, because I was working at such a high level, you know, I never had to talk to somebody about learning how to jump rope, you know, but that's something that does exist. And, you know, those are some pretty good coaches that can communicate that in an effective way.
Yeah. I love what you said about in Europe, like a lot of the good coaches are working with the young athletes. Like it's not just, everyone's not just chasing that highest level. And that's almost where it is the most important to have that good early foundation. Yeah. Like you said,
no question. No question. It limits so much of what we do when we get them at my current level, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's something that's been rewarding for me being able to work with youth track. It's been way more rewarding than I ever had thought it would be originally, like getting into it. And occasionally get the squirrely 6-year-old who just can't. It's more than your babysitter, but outside of that. Speaking of the performance element of what you do, I got some, you know, coaching questions, some more hands-on coaching questions and philosophical ones there. The first one is, with all this stuff coming out with, you know, conditioning and college football, what is your opinion on, what is the line in conditioning and the role of the college strength coach? And what is your take on mental toughness? And the line there and the role of the strength coach in building that type of quality or ideal?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just answered this on a couple different podcasts, actually, because obviously the Oregon situation, right, it came out and, you know, you're dealing with all that. And I mean, my answer actually probably will surprise most people. You know, my personal opinion is that we're coaches and we belong in the coach group as opposed to the medical group, you know, and I know a lot of strength coaches disagree with me on that, you know, but there's just so much of an art that exists with what we do that, you know, when you start throwing a definitive way of doing something versus not doing it in a 60-year-old profession, that there's not enough research to support who's completely right, who's completely wrong. I just don't think that it exists where it's that black and white. you know, and so, you know, like, to me, we're an extension of the coaching staff, you know, and so, you know, I think that we have a huge role when it comes to developing mental toughness and the qualities that it takes to be successful on and off the field or on and off the court or track or whatever, you know, and we all know that as much of that is as mental as anything, you know, and so, I mean, the great thing about strength coaches, that's why I love the weight room, is that it's a laboratory for life. You know, you come in and you have to have a plan and you have to work to achieve it. And you got to work as a team and you got to deal with success and deal with adversity and a lot of these other qualities that, you know, that contribute to a successful day in the weight room. And you're going to go through all that probably in even one session, you know? And so those are great qualities that end up carrying over into sport and carrying over into life. And so it's important that, you know, I think we continue to develop those qualities and we have an opportunity to do that. You know, if we make it laboratory, like where it's come in, here's your workout card, do your workout, you're expected to be able to know why this is important and then leave, we lose the passion and the energy and the why of what we're doing. You know, there's a great book, Switch, by Chip and Dan Heath, and they talk about, you know, changing a culture or changing, you know, an athlete. And, you know, it gives the picture of a man riding an elephant down a path, you know, and so the man represents the rational side, the elephant represents the emotional side, and the path is the situational world, you know, and so to change an athlete or to, you know, you have to motivate, or you have to direct the rider, you have to give them the knowledge, you know. So that's where coming in and saying, okay, you got to lift weights because it's going to make you X, Y, and Z better, and that's why you should do it. And that's what they do in a lot of countries, you know. It's just accepted. The truth is that the athlete is the elephant. They're the emotional person that you have to motivate. You have to motivate the elephant, you know, and finding ways to do that, that's really the art, you know, in my opinion. And then you have to shape the path. You have to put a good framework around that athlete and that, you know, that emotional side and that rational side to get them to where you want to go. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we do as coaches that don't always make sense. You know, I mean, jumping up and down and screaming in somebody's face. I mean, you do that out on the street and you're probably going to go to jail. But in a weight room, you know, there's a place for that, you know, just like there's a place for push-ups and sit-ups and up-downs and things like that. Now, that said, our primary responsibility is to do no harm, just like a medical professional, you know. And so if we do it to a point to where we cause harm, that's where we also – I mean, it's a blurry line. It's a tough line to see, but we got to see it. And we got to err on the side of caution when we approach it, you know. And I think that sometimes that's skewed and sometimes that's influenced by our coaches and – society and things like that, but that's where we have to have a backbone to where we're able to stand up. And, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, we lift weights and we're strong for a reason too. We got to be able to sustain a little bit of backlash or a little bit of, you know, we got to be able to stand up to bullies, or we have to be able to stand up to different things, situations, and if anybody's going to do that, strength coaches should be able to do it.
Yeah, that's a really insightful answer too. I really like just the idea of being a coach, and that I've heard this is like lifting barbells isn't just lifting barbells. There's a mental, spiritual, physical component to everything, and it just goes beyond. And that's what I've learned probably both through conversations and observation, then starting to get my feet in the trenches, is just it's, especially with team sports, it's a lot more than just the sets and the reps and, you know, what effect does this have on mTOR and mitochondria and those things. So,
right. That's the easy part. I mean, it's not rocket science what we do, you know, and the reality is that, you know, they have 22 hours to mess up everything you just did, you know? So if you're not involved with those other 2 hours and from a motivational and from an educational standpoint, you're fighting a losing battle. So it doesn't matter what you do from a strength and conditioning perspective. If you're constantly fighting losing battles mentally or, you know, spiritually or physically when they walk into the weight room.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely agree. That's a great point, Ron. Next question along the training lines is, what is your take on the balance of the new wave of both corrective and kind of the sports science world that's starting to hit strength and conditioning a little bit? And you can take it in either direction. What's your thought? And obviously in what you're doing now with education performance, how should the modern, you know, strength coach be taking some of these new things? I mean, I know at least in the personal training world, a lot of people are diving like head first in the corrective stuff, and that's just the session. Then sports science, a lot of the podcasts are in different cultures. Sports science is so huge. What's your take on some of the balance of these new things that are in the industry at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think innovation and pushing the industry forward and expanding our scope and our knowledge is obviously something that's very, very important. And as coaches, you know, with tech, it's gonna arm us with some great information, with corrective, which by its very nature, I don't like, because it implies that the rest of the exercise we're doing is not corrective, you know. But you know, when you're talking to like a weak link program or some, you know, some corrective exercise, for lack of a better word, I think we do have an obligation to learn those things and try to apply them practically in our setting and address, you know, concerns that can be exposed by doing those. You know, I mean, by doing a screen and identifying imbalances, we should address dysfunction before we load and those types of things. With tech, we do need to know as much information as we can, so we're not just subjectively putting stuff out there. I mean, that said, we can't become so robotic as a coach to where we rely just on those things, or we can't assume those are going to be fix-alls for our deficiencies, you know. And so by us programming a certain way and just chalking it up to corrective exercises fixing what we don't catch, that's the wrong approach, you know. And so I think we do, I mean, to answer your question, I think, you know, we have an obligation to learn those things. I think young coaches that get a solid education and certifications and advanced training in tech or ATC or nutrition would be another area that I think would be another way to differentiate yourself. By getting advanced education in those areas, you're going to bring some values and some skill sets to a staff that most strength coaches don't have. And then you continue to push your envelope of what you're doing with your athletes there. But there is a place, but it shouldn't drive your training.
You're listening to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster. Yeah, keeping it all in balance. I really like what you said there at the end. Like, it's like it's very important to have something, you know, outside of the typical lifting weights and management that you can do well. Like, yeah, sports science, nutrition, kind of have that extra element to what you do. And I think that's great advice.
Yeah, it's going to get you. I mean, if I can hire let's just say you were a CSCS and an RD and you're a good strength coach, if I can get two qualities out of one person, you know, I'm definitely going to do that. You know, if nothing else, even if we have an RD, at least now I have a good liaison that can speak the same language.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And yeah, from when I was at the D3 level, like that stuff is just even more massive. I mean, they make you do so much there anyway, it's almost too much, but it's so nice to be versatile on those levels where you have to wear so many hats too.
Right.
Talking about the other elements of the weight room too, you mentioned, alluded to a little bit before, but your take on creating buy-in in the training program. So how do you sell what you're doing to your athletes in the weight room? And then talk a little bit about the culture, the related culture you would build.
Yeah, I mean, I think you go back to that book and you know, the Chip and Dan Heath and the Elephant and the Rational Mind and, you know, and the Situational Path. I think you gotta frame all three of those. You gotta have qualities that's gonna address those. So, you know, ways that I motivate the elephant is I'm gonna create life experiences and I'm gonna create bonding opportunities and I'm gonna create one-on-one opportunities with athletes. And when you do that, you invest in the person. And whenever you invest in the person in ways, they're, you know, a lot of times they're indebted to you, you know. And so I think the way that I create buy-in the best is I do a why meeting. I know that's like, you know, it's commonly talked about now and everybody was talking about why. But, you know, when you ask people, okay, how do you get to why? You know, they can tell you that you need to find out why, but they can't always tell you how do you get to why, you know. And for me, I do a goal meeting with our athletes where, you know, essentially we do the typical goal setting and, you know, set benchmarks and things like that. But then I come back and I ask, you know, three questions. You know, one is, you know, who's the most influential person in your life? You know, when I do that, you know, I find out who the most influential person in the life is, and I call that person And basically, I make sure the first thing that they hear is something positive about that kid, you know. And so what happens now is that, you know, that person calls their most influential person that week like they normally do. And first thing they hear is, you know, hey, Coach Mack cares about me. You know, he like think about all, you know, from the most influential person in their life. So it creates a little bit of a relationship there. I ask him what, you know, what they would do if they weren't playing football or whatever sport, you know, and a lot of times you get to see what really motivates them outside of sport. And a lot of times they don't know, you know, and you might be the first person to ever really ask them that question. Then the third question I ask him is what's the most difficult thing they've ever gone through in their life? And, you know, you can get to a real place with athletes pretty quick when you share and you're vulnerable and you share what's the toughest thing you've ever gone through as a coach, you know, in your life. And then they turn around and open up and share theirs. I mean, that, there's a walls that are broken down there, you know. And so having those one-on-one meetings, showing their athletes that I care about them more as a person than as a player, and then investing in them, that's how I create buy-in on a daily basis. And from there, then it's just a matter of holding them accountable to those goals.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's something that I really enjoyed from your book, too, was just like, just those points on creating relationships with athletes. And I feel like my question's always, what do you want to do? Like, what do you want to do after college? Just because I'm always interested about it. But I was really blown away with your book. Yeah. Asking the hardest thing that you ever gone through and just the answers you hear. I think that's a really interesting point and just a great way of creating that relationship.
I appreciate that.
So actually, that actually brings me to a question I had for you, at least in terms of yourself as a strength coach. So I got two questions left for you on the show today. Is what's the hardest thing you've gone through as a strength coach in your strength and conditioning career so far, Ron?
In my life or in my career?
Career, your strength and conditioning career, we'll say.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we went through a coaching change at South Florida. You know, at South Florida, I'd been there for 10 years. I'd really grown up as a coach there. I became the head strength coach there at 23 years old and, you know, was there for obviously 10 years and, went through, you know, all the things that you can go through and grow in a program and also went through all the things you can do as getting some notoriety as a coach. I mean, became strength coach of the year. We went to bowl games, you know, all those types of things. And our head coach got accused of hitting a player. I was the only other person in the locker room when that supposedly happened, and it didn't happen. And I voiced my opinions and my, you know, my account to the administration, and basically they didn't want to hear it, you know. And you know, they also turned around and essentially said that, you know, oh, by the way, when we let, you know, when he's fired, which he was, you know, the next guy, he can come in and bring his own guy in, you know. And so for me, that set me down a really dark place, because I've always been a guy that you roll your sleeves up, you work hard, you do a good job, and you're, you know, there should be stability and security in that. And you know, all of a sudden now my job, even though I've done a great job, we've done a lot of success at a place, all of a sudden now is in jeopardy because of things that had absolutely nothing to do with me, you know. And so I, you know, you mentioned Tim Ferriss, I don't know if it was here or before we were talking, but you know, like I came across Tim Ferriss's book, 4-Hour Work Week, and you know, it was freaking cold. I'm working, you know, 20 hours a week or 20 hours a, you know, day sometimes, and I see that book and I'm like, all right, 4 hours a week, that sounds pretty good to me, right? So I read it cover to cover in a day, and it just completely opened my mind to the world of entrepreneurship and having a brand and a presence and all those types of things. And you know, I'll be the first one to tell you that I did not handle that situation right. I did not, you know, with the school, with my employees, with, you know, fellow coworkers, the whole deal. I mean, I was not a good person to be around during that time. I ended up being kept, but you know, I wasn't his guy and he wasn't mine, you know, and, I just was not a good, you know, a person, during that time. And so, I was really bitter on the profession. I was really bitter on the situation, and you know, it also, from that type of place, you know, a lot of times there's, again, you're the most uncomfortable. There becomes this opportunity where I read that book. I started creating a kind of an online presence. I kind of, you know, I challenged myself to be outside of my comfort level, and I'm an introverted guy, but you know, talking to strength coaches on a podcast was I would have never thought about doing that, you know, and started doing that. And then, you know, never in a million years did I think I was going to write a book, you know, much less a bestseller, you know, and all that. I mean, so, you know, it led to me doing a lot of things, getting out of my comfort zone that were pretty incredible looking back on, you know, and it's like, man, I look at it now going, how in the world did how did I do that? How did I get to there? You know? And so, you know, I think there's obviously a lesson there for strength coaches in that, you know, we're going to go through our own tribulations, you know, and tough times. But if you look at it as to where the learning, where's the opportunity within that experience, a lot of times it can lead to great things.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I was kind of almost, some things were coming together in my head as you were sharing that. And it's almost like, yeah, we talk about pain is necessary. I feel like that's almost amplified for the life of a coach or a strength coach, because you're going to have that stuff, like even more than other professions, I think.
Yeah, I think they all have their challenges, but I mean, strength and conditioning is definitely a unique profession. There's, you know, people don't get it. You know, you look at the outside. My daughter asked one time, she's like, Dad, how long is a football game? And I said, 4 hours. She's like, why do you work 80 hours a week for 4 hours? You know, it's like, I don't have a good answer for you, babe. But that's the truth. I mean, it doesn't make sense to the outside world, you know, but to us it does. And again, that's why they're some of the most unique and creative and smart people in this profession, you know, loyal and, you know, hardworking. It's just, it takes a certain type of person to be, of any merit in this profession.
Yeah. That 4 hour work week, for the regular population could be like the 40 hour work week for strength coaches. If like, oh yes, the 4 hour work week.
That's right. That's exactly right.
How do I do this? Cool. And then last question I have for you for the show today is if you could give yourself one piece of advice to yourself, you know, you're say 25 years old, what would that be?
The one that I most commonly give when I'm asked this question is that you can be passionate without being emotional. You know, I think a lot of times as young coaches, especially, we want to show how passionate we are, but we give an emotional response. You know, so there's a dent in the door at the weight room in South Florida where I threw a plate at a kid for being 5 minutes late. You know, I probably could have handled that situation with not as emotional of a response, but just pulling them aside and saying, hey, okay, what's going on? Oh, your grandma passed away. I didn't know that. I'm sorry. You know, are you okay? Yeah, how about we come back and we make that workout up or something along those lines. Instead, I was the dickhead that, you know, threw a plate at him and cussed him out and sent him on his way. And, you know, probably, you know, really, you know, we ended up reconciling, but it was, you know, and I felt like a jerk after the fact, but in the moment, I mean, I really could have lost that kid, you know? And so there's so many opportunities like that as strength coaches where we're trying to show them how passionate, you know, because we're there for 8 hours a day coaching 8 straight lifting groups or, you know, 12 hours a day, whatever it is. You know, and that kid's 5 minutes late. We think that, you know, he's just being disrespectful to everything that we are about and everything we're doing. And sometimes there's things that happen, you know, and doesn't mean we don't need to hold them any less accountable. You know, if they're late, okay, hey, man, you know, here's our late policy. Go do our late policy. Let's go. You know, and it could be just like that. And there's nothing that's lost there. And you don't break down any relationships. And it doesn't mean that I don't go to another level with my temperament at times, but you know, when I do, there's a much stronger message there now, you know, and I think as coaches, we've got to continue to find ways to realize, because at the end of the day, those kids didn't choose to do this for their life. We chose to do this for our life. There's a different type of importance there, you know, for us versus them. You know, we got to remember, we got to put it in context of where they're at in their lives. You know, it's just a piece of the pie for them, you know, so. That would be my advice, I think, is to make sure that you're demonstrating your passion without being emotional.
Yeah, that's an amazing insight and advice there. And that's actually something I've literally been thinking about the last 6 months or even less, is just putting yourself in the other person's shoes before, you know, any kind of second thought, and just been a good practice for me as well. So thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely.
That's all the time we have for the show today, Ron. But thanks so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it, man. Your answers are great. I learned a lot. And good luck with your coaching education and performance pursuits coming up. I'm excited to see what you got on the horizon.
No, I appreciate that, man. And again, thanks to you. And this is something that I preach quite a bit about to coaches is, is find your way to share what you've learned with the community, whatever that may be. Maybe that's podcasting, maybe that's writing articles, maybe that's doing videos or whatever it is. And I know how much work goes into producing and doing these shows. And I mean, you're at the end of your, you know, of a long day of coaching, and you're trying to balance being dad and husband with coach and being able to give back. And so I know how much goes into that, and I appreciate what you're doing and the way that you're doing it, man.
That does it for the show today. Thank you for tuning in for another episode. If you enjoyed what you heard, please don't hesitate to head on over to iTunes, Stitcher, and leave us a review or rating. We'd really appreciate it. Also, please don't forget to visit our sponsor at simplyfaster.com, suppliers of high-end training technology such as the K-Box, Free Lab Timing System, GymAware, RunScribe, SpeedMat, and more. Overall, just an amazing place to get some of the game-changing technology that's on the market today. Also, we're going to be back next week with speed expert Lee Taft. We'll see you then.